This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to PTBN's NBA Team Podcast, whereas we're going to finally finish up our regular season previews. I am one of your co-hosts, Andrew Reich. I am joined by Adam Murray. Adam, we're at the end, but we're moving up, you know, with the order that we're going through the season. We kind of went from the worst to the best. Now we're at the tippy top at the penthouse. Or is the penthouse like in like the ground floor, but you can't access it? Like, where's the penthouse in a hotel?
That would be the top.
Are you sure?
The penthouse buried in like the third floor, and then hey, there's 10 floors above you.
Or is there maybe a building that you just can't get to because it's gated on the grounds? Something like that. Like, what do they call those?
Like, little guest room, guest houses?
I don't know. Something.
Penthouse is
maybe a yacht. Maybe it's like a yacht. Would you consider either? Because we have a. As we're finally finishing the previews, I don't think it's anybody who's been following, and thank y'all for following and listening to all the different parts. It's not you could kind of do the math and realize we only have two left. They're actually in the same conference, the Eastern Conference. But like, is I don't know if this is the yacht. Like, the yacht is like the Warriors, like when they got Kevin Durant. Like, you are untouchable. Like, no one can come near you. Like, is that how you feel about these teams?
Basically, with your analogy, you're either on the yacht, these two teams, or you're under the water because there's only one floor of a yacht. The other thing being the water. So, okay, based upon that, these two teams are on the yacht.
Let me ask you this. If you were in the high floor or the high rise or whatever they call it, the penthouse, have you ever been in the best room in a hotel ever? Or the one that they said was the best?
Well, yeah, but those are not good hotels.
But still, the best is the best.
Well, yeah, of course I'm going to upgrade to the... If I'm on a vacation, of course I don't want to be sitting on the ground floor.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you know, you either take the best room of a lower-priced hotel or you could take the cheapest room in a higher-priced hotel. I will rather get the top rooms, the best rooms in a place that's a little cheaper to save money as opposed to, oh, well, this is a four-star thing. It's like, you know, $400 a night. No. Yeah. Give me the much cheaper. But, or, you know, given the yacht or underwater, I don't have much of a choice.
Well, like, if we're doing that analogy, like, this isn't a situation, I think, where, you know, one bad break for one of these two teams we're going to talk about, like, if one bad break and they're like, they're done, they're terrible, they might have to tank it. Like, it's title or bust, in which case one of them is a team that actually won the championship to the surprise of some, despite them having two really good regular season records in 2019 and 2020 and falling short those two times and then finally winning one. And that's the Milwaukee Bucks. Let's just get this out of the way. In the long scheme of it, when you look at the Bucks winning, but you also look at the context of what was in front of them when they did get to the finals and win the championship, did you feel like they got lucky?
There is no luck to win a championship because you have to go through every other team. You can have favorable matchups, but at the same time, you have to take out everybody. You have to survive the, in theory, 82-game season. You still have to win the best of seven of every series now.
Well, so I respectfully disagree on one part. I do think every championship season needs a little bit of luck. But how much luck did they get? Did they get more than others is kind of what I'm leaning to.
The only luck that happens in a professional season is injuries. That is the only spat of luck. You can have bad bounces, you can have good bounces. The only luck is everybody stays healthy.
And you know what's funny about that? They didn't necessarily get that lucky. They got luckier than the Nets and the Hawks, but Giannis Antetokounmpo was out for I think 2.5 games in the conference finals. That could have broken really bad for him.
But that's why they bulked up and got Drew Holiday and they got, you know, Bobby Portis PJ Tucker to be like, okay, we need people to, it's not just a one horse race. We need a whole team. And that's why, of course, you know, the defending champions have to be on the yacht because that's what they've earned that. Yeah, right.
To be the man, you have to beat the man. And the man right now is the Milwaukee Bucks. In particular, Giannis Antetokounmpo is the man. Like, I don't want to go all the way and say he is the best player, the best basketball player on planet Earth. I still think that's Kevin Durant, who we'll talk about a little later. Unless you disagree. I know, I'm really spoiling it. But he might be the most unguardable player. Like, when he gets in his comfort zone, you can't stop him from doing what he wants to do.
No, not with, you know, the youth is the factor because the people you're comparing him against, the LeBrons, the KDs, they are getting a little, they have getting mileage on them. Giannis doesn't have that mileage. You know, when he's like 33, he's going to be quite broken down and not the player who could pull this stuff off. Now, like, look at the good comparison would be Vince Carter. He went from dunking everybody to elbow in the rim to, you know what, I'm going to develop a jumper and then I'm going to play until I'm 40 because I now have this jump. So eventually his athleticism, he won't be able to dunk it from the free throw line anymore. But
yeah, and it's funny you say that because that's probably what a lot of people consider his Giannis's Achilles heel, is that he doesn't really have a good outside jumper. He probably takes more jump shots than he should. But I understand the purpose of it when Mike Budenholzer coaching him. You want to try to make – in terms of trying to diversify your offense, you want your star player to sort of have it dip his toes into a little bit of everything. And also taking jump shots – and this is why a lot of players are lasting longer in the NBA. Taking jump shots is just easier. You're not wearing out your body so much. You're running a bunch of screens, which causes a lot of like – which causes to wear you down throughout a game. But when you're the lead guy and you're at the elbow, you know, sometimes just rising up and taking a jumper kind of gives you a little bit of a breather. And if it goes in, it goes in. But in the case of Giannis, I would say that it's a pretty low percentage. Once he gets into the paint, he's like Shaq in 2000 or like Will Chamberlain in the 70s and in the 60s. Like, you can't stop him.
Well, the problem is now the three-pointer is the new jump shot. So the mid-range game is dead. But yeah, no, he the difference between Budenholzer and then we look back to Jason Kidd. Jason Kidd was just like, you know what? You be a point guard, take the ball and do whatever. And we learned he couldn't do that.
And his defensive game plan was totally out of style.
Exactly. Now, all of a sudden, let's free you up to do things. Okay, now you have the ball. What do you want to do? As opposed to just, yeah, you're a point guard. You know, I could teach how to do point guard, bring it up. Like, but he can't do that.
Yeah, and they surrounded him with shooters. Budenholzer does like his having outside shooting on his team, which he did. And they also made sure it was a defense-first type of team. Like, the defense sort of led into the offense. They weren't the same team in 2021 that they were in 2019 and 2020, particularly Eric Bledsoe being there. You mentioned Jrue Holiday and basically flipping Bledsoe for him. I don't want to say that was exactly the missing piece, but, you know, they won a championship this time, and the other two times they didn't with Holiday not there. So maybe you can say that.
Yeah, you can say that because, like, DeMar DeRozan couldn't win with him. All of a sudden you flip him for Kawhi. Oh, we won a championship. So yeah, there were other things that, you know, you needed the Brook Lopez, like I said, Bobby Portis, who apparently I'm the only one who's high on everybody, yeah. But PJ Tucker.
Tucker was important to guard Durant in the Brooklyn series. That because he's so familiar with Durant, and also he's a leader. Portis was a guy who had more talent. I would say more two-way talent than Tucker did, but he was more of a wild card because you didn't know what to expect out of him. There were times in the playoffs where he would DNP. Then he would have a game where he played 20 minutes and had 10 points and 8 rebounds. So, like, you never knew what you were going to get out of Portis. Now, they retained Portis in free agency, which was a little bit of a surprise for people. He got 2 years, $9 million. PJ Tucker went out. The one interesting part about it is that when they got Jrue Holiday, because they still had Giannis on, I guess you would consider for his value a cheaper deal. It was like a 4-year, $100 million deal, or a 5-year, $125 million with an opt out. It was, for his sake, it was pretty cheap compared to what other players of his caliber were getting. They knew that his opt out was coming up, and they were trying everything they could to appease the Bucks. Meaning, they were trying to do everything they could to appease Giannis into knowing that they were going to be a contender. He signed a Supermax extension in December or January, and then they re-upped Drew Holiday to an extension. So you already have Middleton locked in. So now it's Giannis, Middleton, Holiday. You still got two more years of Brooke Lopez. So you were trying to figure out, okay, what are the owners going to do now? Because now you're in a big time salary crunch. You're going to hit the tax. Do you go over willingly in order to really make sure that you have some good supporting players around Giannis and make sure that all the your big three there stick together? Or do you start letting players shed off? And what they did is they let PJ Tucker go, but they re-signed Portis, but they also bring in some new faces that I could let you talk about.
They brought in George Hill, big, you know, veteran backup. Played little malcontent.
Yeah.
Yeah. Grayson Allen, hustle guy. Rodney Hood, solid second unit. And then Semi Ojeleye, who is a solid second unit. All they really lost, like I said, is a BJ Tucker, which is kind of a big loss from the leadership perspective. And Bryn Forbes, who, whatever.
Yeah, and the other ones were like Mamadou Diakite and Sam Merrill. But, I mean, that's neither here nor there. I don't think anyone's going to matter too much. Thanasis came back, but let's be real. That's part of the Giannis deal. You got to bring his brother back.
But just going back to Giannis, signing his deal last time, you remember he said, yeah, I will leave some money on the table. You get good people around me. As opposed to, oh, I'm going to take every penny and then I'm going to leave the team crippled. Which, as you're seeing with a lot of franchises, being unable to move high-priced people.
Right. Like, you know, the one Holiday guy was 4 years, 135. For his sake, that's not exactly max. You know, it hovers between – it goes from $32 million the first year of the contract. It ends at, like, $40 million with an opt-out in 2024. So, for his sake, that's about the most he would get. Middleton, I would say, yeah. And Giannis probably took a little less than he could have gotten, to be honest with you.
Could have, but at the same time, again, just going back to the Miami championship team, let's take less to win, or you can be like the Wizards, oh, let's just supermax, and then we can't afford to build a roster around you because you're hoarding all the money.
Well, the other thing, too, is that the owner of the Miami Heat and Pat Riley, they were steadfast on not getting too deep into the tax because the tax at the time, well, the cap was much lower at that time because they were trying to be, the league was trying to be a bit more of a, they had more of a, like a harder or a lower ceiling. So they were trying to discourage too much free spending. But for this team, I guess they realized, look, we got to go a little bit past that in order to.
Yeah, you need to go in, but every million helps. Every million, you know. And when you get over the tax, it's what, $2.5 million for one. So every little penny you can save brings in that veteran that you possibly couldn't get without that.
And that's the difference between like having mid-level and mini mid-level. If you have mini mid-level, which is like one less year and maybe $3 million less per year, that's why you can't get a PJ Tucker to come back because you weren't able to do that and fit him in. So it does matter.
So with Milwaukee, there's only one question with them is, can they repeat?
Well, if they have the full strength team, absolutely. The biggest question is, number one, are they going to be comfortable in a position where teams are going after them instead of them sort of chasing after the championship and being super aggressive and pursuing it? And the other problem for them is really like, can they just keep that momentum going, you know? And also, you're not going to have the same sort of circumstantial luck that you had when you went into the playoffs and you're playing the Nets without James Harden, really, and Kyrie Irving gets hurt, and you're not going to have the Hawks with Trae Young getting hurt. Like, you might have a little bit more adversity. And I guess the owners recognize that in free agency, and that's why they added those pieces. And they're going to have a $40 million tax bill, which sounds like a lot, but they're a repeater. So it's they didn't really go as far over the tax as Brooklyn did. Well, that is like – we'll talk about Brooklyn. But the thing is, Brooklyn does hover over Milwaukee. Like, Adam, like, you can't help but think to yourself – you know, we are the champions. We're the top dog. Everyone's coming after us. But you really have, you got to have the Nets and that big three in the East in the back of your mind all the time.
Of course. So with that said, now we move to the Brooklyn Nets, who...
Well, let's talk about the over-under. They have 53.5 wins for Milwaukee. I would probably safely go over. They had last year 46 wins. It probably would have... If they projected to 82 wins, 82 games, I was probably going to project a little under that. So Vegas thinks they're going to be better than they were last year, which actually wouldn't shock me because... I said this before, is that the Bucks were sort of an inverse of what they did in 2019 and 2020. In 2019 and 20, they had great regular season records, but once they hit adversity in the playoffs, they kind of floundered. Whereas in this one, they kind of held back on their really good stuff, and they sort of worked out the kinks of fitting in Jrue Holiday, and they wound up being 46-26, which on paper doesn't look great. But once they got to the playoffs, they kind of kicked it into second gear. I would probably safely go over, but I don't think they're going to be a 60-win team like they were in 19-20.
Oh, yeah, I'd go over as well.
You know, but I mean, but will they win at all? I think it really depends on the next team we're going to talk about. And I mean, I don't want to try to make it too centralized around them, but I mean, Adam, they got three prime superstars on their team, the Brooklyn Nets.
Well, 2.5 as of right now.
Because of Kyrie Irving and the issues with the vaccination.
And the issues with him vaccinating. Being able to play at home. And that leads to a whole lot of questions is now, it can either fall one of two ways. Either his BFF, Kevin Durant, can get him to get one, and he will get it and then play. Or he'll just take every other game off. And they'll be like, well, we have no incentive to be the home court advantage.
Well, the funny thing is they had home court advantage in that Bucks series. And you can make the argument about why it didn't work out for him. I mean, a lot of people would say that Durant just ran out of gas in that game seven.
They just weren't healthy all year.
Right, because they didn't have Kyrie and they didn't have Harden. And Harden was like I would say probably 30%. Like he was just not – he was not very good in that – tail end of that series, to be real.
Nope, but now they're all allegedly healthy. They're all ready to go, and they're all angry now because I think they know this is their last year. This is their last chance to do it because really the East is just them and Milwaukee. You have all these teams that bulked up, but they can't reach Brooklyn's level. You can't stop that offense when you need to. And the fact that they day two were somehow able to create roster flexibility and add people and get better. And it's just like, what the hell?
They did. Now, here's the thing. We could talk about a couple angles. Now, let me clarify with you one thing that you said at the top. When you say like Brooklyn, like this is the chance. I think they got a couple years into this. Like because a lot of it is prevalent on Durant, Kyrie, and James Harden's not only their contract situations, which are different now between the three, but also their satisfaction with playing with one another. They only played 8 games together. The one thing I will say is that when they were healthy and played together in that first round series in Boston for the most part, and then early on in the Milwaukee series, they worked perfectly. And it was a situation where the supporting cast, regardless of how little they're able to pay to like get other people to tack on, it didn't really matter. Like those three were just so dominant at their positions that once they were flowing and they were getting a fast pace going with Steve Nash coaching them, a new coach at the time, they were just rolling on people. The other thing with the Nets is that if you look past the big three of James Harden, Kyrie Irving, Kevin Durant, Joe Harris, Nick Claxton, and Blake Griffin, and also LaMarcus Aldridge, I would consider him a new arrival because he signed with Brooklyn and he played like 5 games with them, but then he got a medical retirement and then he got a waiver, so he's back. So I don't even consider him like part of last year's team almost. But Griffin, Claxton, Bruce Brown, and Joe Harris are the only other guys that are back on that team to play with Durant, Irving, and Harden from last year. Everybody else is new. Like you add in Javon Carter, James Johnson, Patty Mills was huge because now that gives you a backup point guard in case you don't have Kyrie or Harden.
You have Patty Mills, which is just a complete steal that they were able to get him. Like you said, LaMarcus Aldridge is not, you know, washed up. He retired, you know, he had some sort of heart scare. So, okay, he got cleared. He's back. You got, you know, Blake Griffin. You re-signed him. You got Cam Thomas, who you like, as because he's just a shooter.
Yeah, Bruce Brown's back on a re-sign. Paul Millsap signed there, too.
Yeah, and you got Paul Millsap, who wasn't terrible last year. He wasn't – so you, if you could say, look at Blake Griffin, if we can plug in Millsap and Aldridge under those minutes and just sort of – yeah, they should be no problem beasting in 15 or 20 minutes. It's you don't want them playing 30.
That's a good point, because that was the one problem that – well, that was the biggest problem that they had in that Milwaukee series, especially when you play a complete team like the Bucks. Like, if you have any holes, like, the opposing team's going to attack you, especially when you get in the playoffs and you have to play a team potentially 4 to 7 times in a row. So Bruce Brown, they sort of picked on him because they were trying to sucker him into taking bad shots. And in one of those key games that was close in game 3, he did. Like, he took a bad shot, and it turned right into a Jrue Holiday basket, and it cost him game 3. Which was one of the only games where they still had Kyrie and Durant. Irving got hurt in the next one. The other one was that Blake Griffin, I remember, Adam, unless I'm misremembering, is that Blake Griffin had to play a lot of 5 against Giannis, and that was not a good situation for them. All he was doing was flopping half the time.
That's, you can't keep up with Giannis, especially
having Millsap and Aldridge sort of helps that. Having Mills to back up instead of Mike James and whatever, and Chris Chiusa, like, that's better for you. So I get that. James Johnson, he's a big guy with some strength, but he can also make some threes, so maybe he can spread out a little bit. I do have a few questions about how the alignments are going to work. But if you have Durant, Irving, and Harden together, that's really all you need. Their offense was like in the top, was tops amongst almost everything in terms of three-pointers made. They were the best team in the league in effective field goal percentage. I don't see that changing. The thing about Irving, and even though he can be a basket case, character-wise, personality-wise, is that he's a really, really efficient guard when he wants to be. He can do all the crossover dribbles. He can play tight. He can make a three with a hand in his face. He's a very efficient shooter. Like, he's great at everything. And James Harden is a guy who just fits everywhere he goes.
Well, Harden is who Harden is. We know him. It's just that the small sample size we've seen is the question was, can they play together? And yeah, it looks like they can.
Yes.
It looks like they're ready to go. And basically, if they don't win the championship, it's a complete and utter failure for this team, this roster, this pairing.
Especially with the tax bill. The tax bill is going to be at $120 million. Now, look, God bless the Brooklyn Nets ownership. That's what they want to do. They realize, like, that's the design of this luxury tax threshold of, like, you literally – the only way you can afford 3 max players, which Durant, Irving, and Harden are, is that you have to willingly – goes so far over the tax that you are basically like funding half of the league's revenue in order to make this happen. And they decided, look, this is worth it when they got Harden in the trade in January.
Well, that's what, you know, Golden State did when they got Durant as well. It's like, well,
I have other questions about Golden State, but we talked about them already. Yeah.
It was the, you need to pay to win. And even Milwaukee, yeah, we need to go and look. If you're going to be one of, you know, that's basically seems to be the line is, oh, we don't want to pay the tax. All right, you can only get so far. You need extreme luck or extreme rookies under rookie deals to do it, because you can't have a max player and be, you know, try to be competitive in the luxury tax era.
Right. A few things here. Like, they were 48-24 last year. They were breezing by pretty easily at the end, especially with teams that were tanking that they could just overpower when, because Durant, Irving, and Harden also missed a lot of, like, had a hamstring issue later, like kind of later in the regular season, and then he sort of popped back up in the last few games. So you knew that they had all three of those guys ready to try to warm up for the playoffs. They were going to blow out whoever they played. So I would almost assume if they had an 82 game season, they had 48 wins in the 72 game slate, they win 82. They would have been like a 55 win team. Their over under is right around there at 54.5. I think they're going to blow by that. Like, I think they're actually going to be a 60 win team.
Yeah, they should. There's no reason they shouldn't unless they start getting rest or injured.
Yeah, because they go with the load management technique, which sort of lends into their lack of depth. But the thing is, though, like we talked about, we feel like their depth chart behind them is actually a little better than it was last year, because last year was when they engineered the Harden trade and they had to let go of a lot of pieces, like, you know, Spencer, like, Spencer didn't when he got hurt, but they had to let go of Jared Allen and Caris LeVert. Like, they kind of had to do an about face. This one, they were ready. They knew, look, these are our guys. This is who we build around. Let's try to get pieces that fit. So this one works a little bit better, and I think that's going to show in the record. We'll talk about how far we think they're going to go at the end of the show. But I mean, do you think it's worth it? The big tax hit. Do you think, like, do you feel like watching this, like, this is like the Bulls in the late 90s, or like, I'm trying to think of the Warriors when they were really starting to get high in that tax bill. When Durant was there, like, do you think this is the kind of alignment of superstars where this can win it? This team could win it all.
It's all you'll pay the bill if you win. If you bring home the trophy, it doesn't really matter. If you lose, you're just an expensive failure. So yeah, of course you'll pay it if you win.
But I do think the vaccination drama it's been a little bit foreboding for some NBA players, and it's become sort of a talking point amongst not just sports media but national media about how the vaccination is mandated. There is no mandate amongst the players, and the players' union didn't allow a mandate from the league. But most of them are vaccinated. So I think they said in some press release that it's somewhere between 90% and 95% among the players in the NBA are vaccinated. But you obviously have superstars. I don't think it's fair, Adam, to like make it like a scorecard, like with like players. Like, the ones that we've heard are Bradley Beal, obviously Irving, because he's been outspoken about it. Jonathan Isaac. And am I missing another Michael Porter Jr.? But I don't Andrew like the Wiggins. Fact Andrew Wiggins. Yeah, because he did a weird one where he tried to get a religious exemption and it got shot down by the league. But the thing is, I don't like that, because obviously, even if you're vaccinated, you can still have a breakthrough. So it's this idea of like, oh, you're vaccinated. We could check that off the scorecard. We don't have to worry about you getting the COVID. It's like, well, you could still get it. You know, it's just not going to be as severe. Like we said before, it's just a matter of the circumstance. Like, the NBA has obviously put in a little bit more protocol, and they've reinforced it over the last few weeks to almost scare the players into getting vaccinated. And that creates a little bit of a rough patch between the players and the league. And Irving is known to be a stick in the mud. Let's be honest, Adam. I mean, he's the guy. He is a classic contrarian. Are you surprised that he's sort of riding this out all the way until tip off that he might not play in home games, particularly Brooklyn, because Brooklyn has a very strict mandate where all players have to be vaccinated when they play there?
Well, it's one of those, we will know all the answers within the first few weeks. Okay. Anytime anybody goes to, no, because aren't away teams exempt from it?
I think they are. It's particularly the players who are located and reside there.
Okay. So it is if it was the away players, oh, you'll find out who they are pretty quickly and they'll be added. But Marcus Smart pretty much said, yeah, I got it because I don't want to be a distraction to my team.
Yeah. LeBron did it too.
And people are angry at him for not saying it fast enough. It's like, come on. Like,
that's the point I'm making, is that I don't like this of like, oh, okay, now we don't have to worry about this guy. Let's hassle this player who we like, Jonathan Isaac. Let's hassle Jonathan Isaac for not getting, please stop. And I don't like the right wing side where it's like, no, let's boast the non-vaccinated people as the heroes, the ones who are toughing it out against the oppressive league. It's like, no, it's neither. Like, sometimes it's a personal choice, but I don't like the victimization of like trying to make or the vilifying of it. That part bothers me.
Well, of course they're being vilified for doing it, and they know they are. Kyrie, you know, thrives on the villainy to an extent. You just have there's no mandate that they have to get it, but okay, we're going to make your life uncomfortable, which most people sort of figured it. Most vaccinated people sort of figure out that is the only way to move forward, is if we make it miserable for the non-vaccinated people.
Yeah.
Because we can't get back to normal if we can't do the things we want to, because they go run around like idiots and they keep getting it. Or, you know, that's pretty much summing up their
right. And the reason why, the vaccination issue topic is prevalent with Brooklyn it's not just New York's stringent policy on vaccinations. It's not just the fact that the Nets are the most star-centric franchise now in the league. It's also the fact that that team, in particular the superstars, have had issues with COVID. You know, Kevin Durant had a close contact that pulled him out of a game last season. He's been out unmasked, hanging out during that time period. James Harden, you know, he was out clubbing.
They've all gotten COVID like 17 times.
He got COVID, I think, before the bubble is what I was told. That's why he showed up late to the bubble. Kyrie Irving, not sure about him, but you know, he like we already said, he's been very vocal about being against getting vaccinated, and that's where we're getting a little bit of a we're butting heads, where it's like, okay, are you going to do this or not? Because if not, you can't play in these home games. That would definitely change the outlook of their wins. And maybe that's what Vegas is looking at with 54.5, not 60.
Yeah, they are expecting Kyrie to be out. And yeah, they will be villains, especially, you know, the degenerate gamblers who we would have won. I would have gotten the over had this person played. And so, you know, there's no just simple, let's go about, do our things. There has to be, every side has to be an us versus them in some way, shape, or form. And yes, this will be an underlying distraction that they're going to have to deal with as a team. And
But you know what I do like about it for the Nets' sake in terms of just this particular season? Guess what nobody's talking about with the Nets? They're talking about is Kyrie Irving and James Harden going to sign their extensions, which I don't think we really have the time to talk about necessarily here. We have all season to talk about, because I really don't think those negotiations are going to finish in the next couple of weeks unless there's a total out of nowhere supermax that gets renegotiated with Harden. But I don't think that's happening. But all that talk about the extensions and whether they're going to do it and whether Kyrie's going to get vaccinated or not. And, you know, can they guess what they're not talking about? They're not talking about how good the Nets are going to be, you know, so it actually gives them that opportunity to actually practice hard when they're available to, and kind of form their team so that when they come out, I feel, Adam, they're going to come out of the gate. Like, they're going to be scorching. Like, they might be the last undefeated team to start the regular season, kind of thing.
But we shall see on that. Washington Blues, their home opener now.
Well, they play the Bucks and the Nets, the two teams we're talking about in this session, they play each other in the tip-off.
So your theory might be put to the test quite early.
Oh, you're saying I might be wrong?
I'm just gonna go with the odds.
I think that's the TNT tip off. I'm almost sure of it, because TNT always gets the first one, and I'm almost sure it's the Nets and the Bucks. I don't know if it's in. It's got to be in Milwaukee, because the Milwaukee won the title, and they usually grant the home tip off to the champion, the defending champion. But yeah, that'll be fun for the. I mean, it's not like, oh, the Nets blew out the Bucks, the Nets are going to win the title. Like it's overreaction city, because it's like your first lick of NBA basketball all season. But, you know, it'll balance out. But I really do think, even, you know, Adam, even if it's even if Kyrie does just play road games, I think Kevin Durant and James Harden with that combination alone could probably blow out most of the league.
Well, that's why Patty Mills is a huge, huge signing.
Right. And that's going to do it with the individual team previews that we're doing. We're finally out of the hotel. We can finally see the purview of it. Are you happy?
We made it through all 30 teams. It's amazing.
I know. It was a journey. But for those who took the journey with us, for those teams, thank you. You know, I'm sure some of our win over under predictions will come true, going over, going under. If we make you some money, you're welcome. But we do want to talk about just general predictions for the award, the different awards, like maybe some surprises. Who do you think is going to win the championship? And we could just start really with, since we talked about who we think are probably the two best or the two teams that are most likely to contend for a championship. We'll just go straight to who we think is going to win it all. I got a feeling we're going to be in agreement. I think it's going to be the Brooklyn Nets. I think Brooklyn, if they're healthy and if they don't have too many distractions, I think they're going to probably just win the championship.
On paper, they appear to be in the driver's seat, so I agree with you.
Here's let me throw a monkey wrench at that one. Who do you think if they do go to the finals and win the championship? Like, who do you think they would beat in the finals?
Oh, it'd have to be the Lakers, who are also built for the championship this year.
You know, maybe this is sort of like a little bit of a new era. We have a little bit more of that franchise parity when it comes to finals appearances. I think the Nuggets are going to get there.
Oh, I think the Lakers are fully going to crap out, but I'm saying on paper they are built that they have to go to the finals again.
Right. I'm putting it out of the mindset of like, okay, once we get through that journey of the 22 season, who's going to be left? And I feel like Denver's got the best shot, especially if Jamal Murray is ready to go in April or March or whatever. Like I really like that team. They're going to be really expensive. They're going to be kind of touching where the Nets and the Bucks are in terms of luxury tax, but you know, maybe it was worth it. League MVP. I'll let you have the first crack.
I got to go with Luka because he's the only thing really on that team. So if they do anything, it'll be because of him.
You know, I'll make a prediction about that one with Luka. I think his numbers might be a little tamer, but he's gonna be more efficient. And I think that's what, and when it comes to PER, you know, the people love that stuff. So that might be part of it. That's a good pick. I went back and forth with a few guys. Kevin Durant was one I thought of, but Giannis, you can never take out of the equation. But the guy I went with is a guy who I really liked as an MVP favorite, but he fell short. I think Joel Embiid's going to win it. And I know people are like, well, how many games are you going to play? If it's 82 games and you only play 60, there's no way. Here's the thing. If you think load management was a problem before this, wait till you see the 2022 season. You're going to see the first 3 months, October, November, December. You're going to see DNPs of superstars all over the place. This is going to become the normal. And I think if you see 60 to 70 appearances out of Embiid, that's going to be enough. Like, I think he's the best big man in the league. Ben Simmons is not there for a bunch of reasons. And he's going to probably be holding the mantle. Like, I'm the guy. And if the Philly's still up there as like one of the best teams in the East by the end of it, he's the guy that's responsible for it. And so that's one of my favorites. Rookie of the year.
I'm going to go with Cade. It's going to be Cade or Jalen Green, pretty much.
I agree. Like, I think that those are the other thing too, Adam, is that those two are in the best position to thrive. Like, when they go in, they're going to be needed as soon as possible to show what
they're
in
the best positions to thrive because their teams are bad. I just think Detroit's going to be a little bit better overall and have more. Jalen Green is just going to be, I'm going to score buckets, but their team's going to be terrible.
But that's the part I think is going to kick in. I think what it is with Cade, they might be more careful, especially if they have like some sort of an injury scare, and they're going to be more patient with him. And they're going to sort of let him be more passive because Cade can also play passively and be a really effective player. Jalen Green, I think the Rockets are just going to go on the attack with him from the get-go. I think that franchise, in terms of their approach, they're going to be more aggressive in terms of just putting out their best lineups. And I think Green's going to be in most of those lineups, which is going to lead to him getting a ton of minutes. And I think that's going to be the deciding factor on that one. But I can't argue with either of them. And I didn't really think of any other rookies. Were there any other rookies you thought of that might surprise? Like, I don't think Suggs is going to get a ton of playing time in Orlando.
He'll get playing time, but he's not. There's nobody who's going to score in droves.
Yeah,
the team has to be terrible in order for them to do it.
Right, and like Scotty Barnes in Toronto, like Toronto might actually bounce back and be okay. So I'm just not sure. Like, those two are good. For defensive player of the year, I like Drew Holiday. Like, I think that he's going to get that because now he's got that reputation, especially after the finals and the Olympics, of like being this like shut down defender. And if he has really good defensive numbers again, that might lead to him actually getting some hardware. Yours is a little bit of the same, but it's a good more of the same.
No, mine's just you go with a defending champion who shows no signs of giving up or slowing down. So you got to go with Gobert again.
I mean, it's not a bad pick. You know, it's like, remember Jamal, how many times did Jamal Crawford win Sixth Man of the Year? Like three or four times? Like.
And that's why I got Jordan Clarkson as the Sixth Man of the Year again, because he was so good last year. They brought the same team back, so there's no reason he shouldn't repeat.
Yeah, I went with Tyler Hero with the Miami Heat because I think Miami's going to struggle a little bit on offense despite the new additions. And I think Hero can be one of those spark plugs that comes right in and scores right away. And also the fact that Lowry is in there, it's going to be easier to have him ride the bench to start games. Most improved player is not one of those awards that everybody thinks about, but it's always fun to like debate because it's such a general vague type of topic. Like, is it a rookie who has a great second year? Is it a guy who struggles, a veteran who struggles and bounces back? Is it a guy who got injured and comes back? Like, if that's the case, it's Klay Thompson, but that would be called the comeback player of the year. So this is more of just someone who really improves from the year to year. The ones that I liked, there were a bunch of that I could consider, but the ones I personally liked the most were Jaren Jackson Jr. and DeAndre Hunter. Like, those were the two that I thought of. And I like Jaren Jackson Jr. more than Hunter, because if you actually look at Hunter's numbers, they actually were pretty good. He averaged like 16 points a game. He was just injured a lot. Whereas Jackson, his numbers, despite injuries, his numbers were tame. I could see him in a contract year really just exploding and being the star five for Memphis.
I would have thought, since you picked Denver as the underdog, you know, champion pick, you would go with Michael Porter Jr. as
He's not paid like an underdog. He got signed to a 4-year, $172 million. It's also got the dreaded $205 million supermax incentive, where if he's all NBA, it kicks in, that Jason Tatum just barely missed out on. So what you thought, just as an aside, what you thought of him, that not only doubling down on Porter Jr., but also giving Aaron Gordon that extension, which assures them being a luxury tax team next year.
They are doing the Atlanta thing. They're saying, we're going to keep this team together for what, 2-3 years now, as is. So we don't care if we're going to pay. This is the team we're going to have. So we don't need to keep retooling. We're going to go in with these guys as of today. Tomorrow, that could all change. They could be like, yeah, we want Ben Simmons, so let's just throw a monkey wrench at everything. But yeah, right now, this is their, we're going, this is our, we're just going to be like Utah. Just, this is our solid team. We got it. They all grew up together. So this is going to be,
keep the band together.
Yes. Yep.
But at a price. You had MPJ at the lead there. You had a couple of interesting ones to follow that, though.
Yes. I was going to say, because I try to think outside of the box. So I'm like, okay, San Antonio's going to be terrible. So DeJounte Murray has a chance to step up and become
he'll probably be their leading scorer. Right.
Yeah. So that alone should put him in the conversation, especially if they don't go all tanking. And then OG Anunoby. Because defense is a rare skill. And
well, here's the thing too. You don't expect Scotty Barnes to just be the scorer. Someone's got to do it at the three or the four, depending on where you're playing him at. And Siakam's going to be busy sort of being like the lead guy now that Kyle Lowry's out. So
if he could become a solid number two, that mm-hmm. might propel you. So yeah, I try to think differently on that one.
Yeah. A couple other guys I kind of liked, Miles Bridges, who already improved from the year previous. So I don't know how much more he can improve. Patrick Williams is going to get a ton of playing time in Chicago. But how good he's going to be from a PER standpoint with more exposure at that young of an age is left to be determined. And Darius Garland, I think Darius Garland could really blow up if Cleveland has like a shockingly good start. Coach of the year, I went with Tyronn Lue with the LA Clippers. Like, I think they're going to play super small with Paul George, and George, I think, is also going to have a really good regular season, and he might surprise and keep them afloat as a home court team in the Western Conference. And then they get Kawhi Leonard back and people are going to get excited.
I kind of copped out and took Spoelstra.
Spoelstra's not a bad pick, though.
Yeah, like, because every year he seems to work magic with his rosters. So if they are the number three seed, I think he will get the nod. But there's also wild cards. Like, if Dallas puts themselves in a top four position, Jason Kidd should probably be considered for it.
Jason Kidd has so much growing up to do. Hopefully he did it in LA as an assistant. That's all I can say.
And, you know, there's a lot to be said about second chances, that most people do things sort of differently because they know what got them fired the first time.
Right.
So there's, I sort of copped out on that one.
It's okay. Scoring leader, I was actually kind of jealous of yours. Yours was probably the one I was going with, but
you could have disagreed. You could have been like, yeah, you know what? It will be Bradley Beal.
I want to, but I went with another one who I think has got a really good chance. I think Damian Lillard might win the scoring title. I think this is a situation where Portland's trying to show like show Portland they're legit. And I feel like Damian's going to feel like, you know what, I got to take on more. And he's going to really ramp up the scoring even more than he normally does, if that makes any sense. Another guy I thought of was Jason Tatum. I think Jason Tatum's going to average like 28 to 29 a game. I mean, the thing is, like, Bradley Beal, didn't he average like 30 points a game?
Yeah, he
And Curry was like just a shade over him. Like, dude, 29 points a game is not enough in today's NBA to win the scoring title.
No, I mean, though, you need to be have some gaudy numbers.
Right. And Paul George. I think Paul George is going to get a ton of playing time and a ton of shots up in LA, especially if they go small. Exactly the year, you didn't really care about that one. I went with Travis Schlenk with the Atlanta Hawks if they have a really, really good record. Did you have any bold predictions just in general for the season as we finish this up?
I don't have super bold predictions. I think CJ McCollum will be dealt by Christmas.
Okay.
I think if, as I sort of expected, because they're terrible, and based on where we put them in our rankings, if Portland gets off to a slow start, it might be, okay, we need to appease Lillard. We need to go do something now. We can't wait till the end of the year to split up this duo. We need to make a big splashy move.
Yeah, and that's going to keep McCollum busy because he, as we had talked about before, he's the new president of the Players Union. I also read that Michelle Roberts is going to retire at the end of the year, and that they already hired or they're getting set to hire Tomiko Tremaglio as the next executive director. So I guess that's what I did read about Tremaglio is that she negotiated the WNBA Players Union's CBA in 2019. So somebody who's really familiar with new media to try to figure out how to get that to keep the revenue model straight. So, I mean, I don't think that's big news. Do you have anything to say about that one, or is it just fresh blood?
That's your bold prediction?
No, it's just an aside. my bold prediction is that there's going to be a lockout now that we have a new union head. No, I don't think that's going to happen. Did you have any other ones other than McCollum?
One of the Tankapalooza teams who are in the sub-basement / outhouse / whatever will panic and try to make some moves that won't necessarily make them better. It'll just make them more expensive. Sort of like how Cleveland's been slowly doing, just getting expensive but not good. I can see one of those teams like, oh, we need this veteran.
Okay. Like Detroit. Like Detroit's like, you know what? We got Cade Cunningham. Let's get a star with them now while the going is good kind of thing.
Yes. We need to get somebody who's above average but not superstar. But, you know, I could see them like, oh, we got Cade. You know who'd be great with Cade? We put Buddy Hield next to him.
Right, something like that. That's what actually happened with Zion and the Pelicans. Like, oh, we need to get a star with them. Well, they already had Brandon Ingram, but they're like, we need another one. Let's bring in Eric Bledsoe. He has experience on a good team, and it didn't work. You know, sometimes it doesn't work. And that's it for you. The bold predictions on your side?
I don't really have much others.
Boy, you just go with the flow, do you? Nothing bothers you.
Whatever happens, happens. So, what are your what are your bold predictions?
Well, maybe these might happen. I think Greg Popovich is going to retire at the end of the season. I just heard that he's not coming back as the Team USA head coach, and that they're probably going to announce it really soon. Grant Hill. There's rumors that it's going to be it might be Steve Kerr, Nate McMillan, or Monty Williams, someone who's had assistant coaching history in Team USA. But I found that to be kind of strange that Popovich only did two stints. One that he lost and then the gold medal in Tokyo. And then he just kind of steps and then he says, I'm done. I'm kind of wondering if he's winding down. So that's my first one. What do you think of that one?
Oh, he has to be winding down because the NBA changed so fast, really in the past 5 years. And he tried to keep that old school style going. Mm-hmm. The problem is now you don't have the pieces to make it fit.
Right.
The big, you know, Twin Towers type setup no longer works anymore. So
yeah, and to say this about Popovich, because he was a defense, he had a defensive philosophy. Defense works in the NBA. You need a good defense to win a championship. That's not what Adam's saying. What Adam's saying is that too big, sort of physical, pound the rock lineup stuff, that doesn't work anymore. You know, and if you do, you need to, if you do pound the rock or go too big, you need to have a really great big man like Joel Embiid in Philadelphia. If you don't have a guy like that, you can like hover everything around. It's not going to work. And San Antonio is just in a pit. Like, this is a team that I don't know if, I think I made the prediction that they're going to probably be the worst record in the league.
Which I also disagreed with. So that's what we have. The bets are San Antonio not being the worst and then Brooklyn not being the last undefeated team.
I think Karl Anthony Towns is going to demand a trade by the end of the season. I think he's kind of done with all the dysfunction in Minnesota. Then it really it's even gotten worse with Gerson Rosas getting fired as the team president. It got to a point where the GM, Sachin Gupta, he was locked out of the facility by the team president, Rosas. So they sort of found the new ownership, which one of them is actually Alex Rodriguez for the Timberwolves. They sort of vetted Rosas and looked into his process, and they decided that he was kind of unseemly in terms of the way he did business and his relationships, and they let him go, you know, and now Gupta is running it. So
if you could get the players behind it, then there's no problem. They were shocked by it, but if you can, you know, this is why we had no intention of keeping him. And I think we mentioned if they did good, or did that come out? I think that came out after we recorded. Well,
it came out after. But what happened is Cat, Karl Anthony Towns, he did media day and he looked so defeated already. I mean, it's the first day of media day. And he was just like, more of the same. It's the same thing every day. I hear every year there's always something crazy that happens that none of us in the organization expect. He almost looks like it almost looks like he's tuning out already with Minnesota. And I feel terrible for him. He tried to be competitive in Minnesota. He's a really good player statistically. He did not get along with Jimmy Butler. And I mean, that's very, very well publicized. You know, his mom died from COVID. And then he lost 50 pounds when he himself got COVID. So he took it really hard. And it's been a journey for Cat in Minnesota.
Now, I can imagine if there's somebody who's unvaccinated on the Timberwolves.
Well, one would have been Andrew Wiggins if he wasn't traded to Golden State.
Like, I don't think with Towns on your team, you would be able to get away with it.
Right.
And be then like, I have reservations. You'd be like, no, get out.
But if Karl Anthony Towns demands a trade, there will be so many suitors. I mean, I know there's always been talk, like, because of their connection when they played together at Kentucky, about him and Devin Booker in Phoenix. But I mean, I really don't see that. It's just one of those things where from a roster standpoint and a payroll standpoint, I don't think you can make it work. But if he actually demanded a trade, I think there would be I think almost every team in the league would be drooling to try to get him in exchange for some assets. And the last big one I had is that neither LA team, the Lakers, neither the Clippers are going to make the NBA finals. I just think they're going to fall short. I think they have too many holes in their armor. I think someone's going to find out what is their biggest weakness in the playoffs before the finals, and they're going to expose them and eliminate them.
Last bold prediction from me, I will be happy to see fans in the crowd and like something like old school times of, oh, look at that. These are what normal games used to be, with atmosphere as opposed to let's have fancy lighting. And
well, we kind of got to that point in the finals, pretty
but
much.
That was just the playoffs. And then it was by that point, it was already like the end of a long, shortened, smushed together season. This is, hey, it's opening night. All the stadiums will be full, arenas will be full, crowds will be into it. It's something that we haven't seen in 2 years, so it'll right.
And in the playoffs, obviously lesser games than the regular season. You see big plays, there's more at stake, but you do see incredible plays in the regular season, particularly like dunks, great singular performances, like stuff that will really like that when there's a crowd in front of it, it has a different energy. So I agree with that. Like, for example, the Raptors playing in Tampa was terrible. Like, I don't think anybody felt good about the Raptors having to play in Florida when they're the Toronto Raptors. They weren't able to go to Jurassic Park or the Air Canada Center. I do think it hurt them. Like, I think it actually hurt the way that they played.
Yep. And with that said, it was a pleasure doing all these season previews with you.
Oh,
it'll be a pleasure doing now, regular season again.
You're not going to hold out on me when the season starts like Ben Simmons is with Philadelphia, are you? Because if so, I'm going to have to hold half, like 25% of your paycheck.
We've made it this far.
Oh, so you're not giving me any promises like Ben Simmons did. I'm going to have to get Rich Paul on the phone and see what he says about that.
It's a personal decision of mine. I like to keep it private. Mm-hmm. I'm not trying to make this political. But
yeah, I didn't realize. I will say this about Ben Simmons, just because I'm ragging on it, is that I did not know you could put player salaries in an escrow account. That's the first time I ever heard that.
I guess it's one of those we're not. You have to. It goes somewhere. He has to get paid his contract. You can't just say you've now forfeited all your money. So
I don't think that's going to end. I don't even think that's a bold prediction. That's not even a spoiler. I think that's a situation that I think everybody listening to the show knows. Like, I don't think Ben Simmons and Philadelphia are going to be together much longer.
Oh, that's not a bold prediction at all. That's why I don't think we've either mentioned it. It's just that is just now a dumpster fire, which Philly, A, you could say whether or not they deserved it from all their, you know, the karma of tanking and being terrible on purpose for all these years. But they just have a history of just messing with players.
Mm-hmm.
So if this was the first one, I can't defend Ben Simmons because really kind of acting like.
Right. Well, that's what I was going to say. If Ben Simmons didn't mess with his jump shot so much, maybe he wouldn't be in this position. Is how I feel.
It's one of those, you know, it's a team sport where you're just being completely selfish by saying, I'm taking my ball and going home, literally. But at the same time, Philly has a history of dysfunction. So,
right.
But when
something goes down, we'll be here. We ain't going nowhere.
For Andrew Reich, I'm Adam Murray. Have a good one.
See you later.